everybody, and welcome to this edition of Stream On. I'm Jim Williams, your host, and it should not come as a surprise to anyone that sports fans are massive streamers. Okay, they're headline big time, right? Okay. Captain Obvious, thanks for it. Appreciate it. Well, look, there isn't any question. We like our sports and we like to take it with us. So whether you can take it on your tablet, take it on your phone, put it on your big screen, it doesn't matter. You like sports, you like to consume it wherever you can. We get that. And so does Wallet Hub. And they did an outstanding survey on really where are the best sports cities in this country. And I thought, you know, it might be a little fun to take a little step away from the normal conversations we have here about streaming video and talk a little bit about what makes a great sports town and conversely, what makes a bad sports town, you know. Goes both ways. Well, we have a guest who certainly knows how that works, and her name is Jill Gonzalez. Jill is from Wallet Hub. And Jill, first of all, welcome. Second of all, tell us a little bit about Wallet Hub.
Wallet Hub is a personal finance website that takes big topics, breaks it down for what it means for your wallet, what it means for the economic of the country and possibly of your state.
Mm-hmm. Now, you guys put out some outstanding information this past week having to do with some things that you broke down, which I thought was fascinating, frankly. And it's really the best and the worst cities for a number of different sporting events. And I think that, you know, that to a lot of people is a fascinating thing because we do equate our sports teams with our cities.
Absolutely. I mean,
go ahead.
We look at this. You know, we want to make sure that we're not just looking at this from a performance level, right? Mm-hmm. I think the finals do that for us, but we wanted to include other things that really make being a fan what it is today. So, mm-hmm. you know, how possible is it for you to get the game? How accessible is that? What are viewership rates like from city to city? How much do tickets cost? How is that accessible to everyone? Mm-hmm. And the traditions, obviously, looking past, but also how the team is doing currently.
Mm-hmm. I noticed in your best cities category, you had Boston, New York, Los Angeles, Pittsburgh, Chicago, Philadelphia, Detroit, D.C. is eighth, Dallas and Atlanta tied for nine. Those are your top ten. I'm not surprised at the numbers. I think that some people might be surprised at Pittsburgh at number four.
Pittsburgh, for a number of reasons, is a big sports city here. Mm-hmm. A couple of teams that have been doing well for years. Mm-hmm. Also, just historically, you know, some championships going on in the city. And I think that it's a very accessible city, right? So unlike New York or L.A., where it's expensive to get the game, it's hard to get the game, it's really not the case in Pittsburgh. You have some pretty good ticket prices, kind of run-of-the-mill, and really accessible stadiums.
You know, it's funny. I've been in the television business for 40 years, and, year in and year out, especially in football and hockey, and to an extent, baseball as well. Pittsburgh has always been a real bellwether city from a standpoint of loyalty to their teams. Win, lose, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it has this, tougher mentality that I would maybe relate to Cleveland, where it's kind of us against the world. And you see that in attendance, you see that in viewership. Like you said, year in, year out, might not have the strongest team, but you still have fans and seats showing up.
Well, I know that a lot of people in the state of Florida are excited about some of the numbers that you put here. I think they would be surprised that St. Petersburg in your baseball rankings being rated in the top 20 ahead of, such stalwart cities as Philadelphia, which is a great baseball town.
Yeah, I mean, when we're looking at all, you know, towns of all shapes and sizes, I think that's when, you know, you get some good NCAA numbers, obviously, because you include collegiate teams. We, when it comes to baseball, we include the minor league teams. So, you know, those two things. And plus, you know, when you think of spring training, you know, and how largely Florida is affected by that, I think that they, you know, totally understand why some of these smaller places, but in Florida, are ranking really well here. Because it really is, I mean, especially when you're talking about in a boom to its economy, I mean, it's huge in the spring.
Absolutely. And, you know, you even during the summer, of course, you've got the Rays are there for their 81 games. So I think in that standpoint, it shows that there's still an interest, and it's at a good profit point. If you're a fan, it's not expensive to go to a baseball game in St. Petersburg as it might be to go, say, in a New York or a Los Angeles or some other major metropolitan city.
Exactly. And that really weighs in here. And you see that sometimes in attendance too. I mean, the bigger cities, you don't have a problem selling out stadiums, but when a certain team in maybe a smaller city is doing really well, then obviously that's going to be huge. And when ticket prices are still not as high as a bigger city with a team that's not as good, that's when the fans really are going to show up. Or, you know, you might make new fans out of that.
Sure. And, you know, in your basketball breakdown, you singled out the Miami Heat. Would you please give us an idea of why they were singled out?
Sure. So Miami, in general, ranks really well here, especially when it comes to larger cities. But when it comes to the most engaged NBA fans, they're tied for number one with a couple other major cities. But you see a huge difference between Miami Heat fans and New York Knicks fans, Sixers fans, Wizards fans, really showing a lot of engagement, especially when it comes to social media, you know, whether it's good or bad, right? It's still engagement. You still see them, you know, really pushing for their team. So we thought that was interesting, too.
I think to an extent, and perhaps you can tell me wrong because you've got, you know, you're the analyst, but I think because basketball is a worldwide sport, just like soccer, there is, you know, the culmination of all the right things, right? You've got the weather, you've got the atmosphere that people love basketball because they're from either South America, where it's, you know, big in Brazil and throughout South America, just like soccer. You got a lot of Europeans that visit. Again, you know, basketball's become big over there. And then it's, of course, because it's Miami, it's a happening. So you've got all that, you know, perfect storm rolling together.
Yeah, absolutely. Those games, there's a sense of, you know, who's going to be at the game, what stars are going to be there. Like, you know, you don't get in all cities. It shouldn't be the end-all, be-all, but I think that's, you're right, it's the reason why fans are still flocking the games and still, you know, tweeting about it, following up with it. So I think that is,
What what makes a good sports city from Wallet Hub's standpoint?
You know, the reason that we include all of these different metrics is because, you know, and we talk to sports management professors as well. It's not just performance. It really is that loyalty that you spoke of when you were talking about Pittsburgh. You know, it's that we're with you through thick and thin. It helps when ticket prices are a little bit lower, run-of-the-mill. It helps when the stadiums are actually accessible and easy to get to. But it also helps when you've got a great downtown scene where people are gathering for games, even if you can't necessarily go. This sense of camaraderie. You know, I'm thinking about last night for the Capitals Knights game when even though it was in Vegas, D.C.'s arena was ready, it was iced over, it was packed with fans just watching the game on the big screen.
By the way, The attendance at the Caps, game that wasn't a game that they were watching on television last night was just under 15,000 at the Capital One Center.
Exactly. I mean, this is the loyalty that we're talking about. You know, these are fans that just want to be around the electricity of other fans. Mm-hmm. You know, they couldn't get to Vegas, but they support their team so much. I mean, that's what we're talking about when we're talking about a good sports city. It's not necessarily performance. It's not the stars. You know, it's mm-hmm. not a concert on the ice for every game. But I think that's what really makes a good sports city.
What about a good college sports city?
I think college sports, you know, really is more soaked in tradition, right?
Mm-hmm.
We think of great rivalries. We think of, you know, Hall of Fame coaches. I think that, you know, when we're talking about major leagues and anything, mm-hmm. it really is, you know, you could have a great year and all of a sudden your city is now on the map for baseball or for hockey, you know, mm-hmm. what have you, for the next few years, you're going to be a good team, and then it's the next city, wherever.
Mm-hmm.
For college sports, though, it really is more about tradition,
mm-hmm.
I think. You know, there's a lot of teams that have great, or a lot of cities that have great traditions,
mm-hmm.
but their teams haven't been good for years, and yet you still have such momentum whenever the season starts. I think that that really has more to do with that tradition and what these schools are known for.
You know, to your point, I mean, I did college football and basketball for a number of years in the Big Ten, in the Southeastern Conference. And you could go, you know, on a Saturday morning, you'd get there for a noon kickoff, and you'd get there very early in the morning, like 5:30, 6 o'clock. There would already be people in the parking lot that had been there the night before. They were cooking breakfast and just, you know, all getting together. And then when it became kickoff time, you would see, you know, the family part their ways. There would be the kids who would go to the student section. The parents would go someplace. And in some cases, even the grandparents would go. So you had generations of people literally walking through the gates of, you know, the University of Michigan or Alabama or even some of the smaller institutions like, say, James Madison or something like that. So there is a, to your point, there's a tradition that that draws people back to the small towns in, you know, throughout America to watch college sports.
Absolutely, yeah, and even the smaller schools that I don't think are known for sports
mm-hmm.
still have their quirky little traditions surrounding the homecoming game or
mm-hmm.
something like that. You know, there are still reasons why people flock back to that. And I think,
mm-hmm.
again, all soaked in that tradition and memory, things like that. So as someone who went to Ohio State, I can tell you, so tradition's certainly important. And even when we're looking at college sports, you know,
mm-hmm.
things change. I think for basketball, you know, when we're so used to seeing the Big East
mm-hmm.
dominate, and now the Big Ten is taking a pretty good whack at them,
mm-hmm.
that's interesting to see, too, right, how things change and how conferences change. You know, so I think when we're talking about college sports, tradition is important, but there's always that opportunity to become, you know, the next big school for
mm-hmm.
playing. So I think that's pretty cool to see, too.
Yeah, I think you know, you're speaking of Ohio State, and I've spent many a Saturday on the banks of the Olentangy, as the old saying goes, in Columbus, Ohio. And that's more of a religion than something that people get onto. But then, as you say, you go to Central Florida, which is, you know, a school that up until, you know, the late 70s, early 80s didn't even have you know, a freshman and sophomore situation. You had to graduate from a junior college to get into the school. And now it's got 50,000 students and is one of the largest schools in the country, has a great football program. and is constantly, you know, on the march, just as USF in the Tampa St. Petersburg area. It's not uncommon, of course, around the country as well. There are a number of those types of commuter schools that are now have tremendous followings. But, you know, it's not as much the tradition there as it is the building of a new tradition.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we see that every year, too, when March Madness comes around. Like, everyone wants the small school Cinderella story because what embodies sports more, right, than that
right.
building of something, that coming from behind. So absolutely, I mean, that's why we look not only at the actual leagues here, but we have to include collegiate teams as well, just because, you know, that's such a huge chunk of what American sports is.
Yeah, and there, I can tell you from experience of going, as I said, around to the different small cities, right? There, I used to go to Auburn, Alabama, or to Starkville, Mississippi, or over to Iowa City, Iowa. And you would find out that if you went there during the baseball season, that they had as big a radio network as some of the Major League Baseball teams. And just for their college baseball. So there is, no matter where you are in the country, a good story to be told. And whether it's minor league baseball or professional baseball or football or college football or whatever it is, I think what you guys hit on was that there is a good buy at hand, if you will, a good opportunity to get something at a reasonable price.
Yeah, especially for families, you know, those minor league teams, especially, that's huge for them. We get a lot of comments. I think when we first started doing the baseball report, we didn't include minor league. And we got so much backlash because that, you know, for so many smaller towns and smaller cities, you know, that is what their family life kind of thrives upon. So that's why we started including that. And, of course, you know, it does certainly affect the majors, too, when people get pulled up. So you're right. I mean, that's, for small-town America, you know, that's their weeknights and their Saturdays.
Well, it's a cool thing, too, because, like, I know my brothers live in the Lehigh Valley area, and they have a team, which is a Phillies AAA farm club called the Iron Pigs. And basically, after going to Yankee Stadium to a number of games with my nieces, they decided one week to just, you know, stay home and go to the game in town. They did, and they found out that not only was it, you know, that the kids enjoyed it more, it was a great deal more less expensive than trekking over to New York to see the Yankees play.
Exactly, and you can get a hot dog for a reasonable price. I mean, yeah, no, it's a win-win, and I know the same can be said for many other teams. I think the smaller hockey minor leagues kind of have the same kind of family vibe that we've heard of. So, you know, a lot of good opportunities across the country to see a great game, go with your entire family, and not have to spend that much money, which, unfortunately, a lot of sporting arenas are now really banking on.
Right. Let me ask you something before we get away here. Are you a sports fan? And if so, what are your favorite teams?
I'm a huge sports fan. So I grew up right outside of Philly.
Okay.
It's been a pretty good year for us. Very happy about that. I'm an only child, so my weekends would be, you know, ballet class that my mom would take me to, and then I'd rush over to the Eagle Stadium, the Wink back then, in my tutu. So, really big sports fan. All Philly teams are what I live and die by. Went to Ohio State, so obviously a very big Buckeye. While I was there, we were doing great in football and basketball, which was nice to see. And I currently live in D.C., so a lot of, I would say the Cavs probably mostly are my home away from home team. I will never root for the Redskins, but other than that, those are my teams.
Special thanks to Joe Gonzalez from Wallet Hub for joining us. And we'll be back with more of Stream On right after this. Sling TV is America's number one live television streaming service, and I'm here to tell you that I am proud to be a slinger. That's right. Slinging is about breaking norms and connecting people with TV that satisfies through choice and control at a reasonable price. It is a way of life. Anyone can be a slinger. I invite my friends to enjoy the choice and control that only Sling TV can offer. Hey, millions are doing it, folks. You want freedom, right? Well, Sling gives you the freedom and the choice to craft just the right package that fits your interest. If you're a newsie, you've got CNN, you've got MSNBC, you've got Bloomberg, you've got CNBC, you've got HLN, you've got BBC World. That's just to name a few. If you're a sports person, hey, no problem there. You've got the ESPN family of networks, Fox Sports Networks, NBC Sports Network, and much, much more. Lifestyles, HGTV, Food Network, Travel Network, Lifetime. Entertainment, there you go. You got TNT, TBS, USA, Comedy Central, A&E, plus much, much more. Multiple languages, no problem. Sling has 22 different languages at the lowest price on the market anywhere. So give Sling TV a try today. I will bet that you're going to be a slinger just like me for a very, very long time. So go to sling.com. That's sling.com and check out how to be a slinger today. Welcome back, everybody, to Stream On. I'm Jim Williams, your host. Now, if you have not yet subscribed, first of all, shame on you. Second of all, we certainly do make it simple. It is, first of all, free. You can get us at the iTunes store because we are proud to be part of the Apple Podcast family. You can pick us up at the Google Play Store as well as Blog Talk Radio. Now, if you are someone who loves podcasts, and I'm hoping that you are, you can find us on the biggest three. That's right, on Stitcher, on Spreaker, and of course, on the TuneIn app. Okay, so that is about 200 million people subscribe to one of those three. So you're going to have no trouble finding us. All you have to do is search Stream On with Jim Williams, hit the favorite button, and every week we're going to come directly to your phone or to your tablet or to both, all right? Also very cool is if you are someone who is in the Apple family or maybe Google or perhaps you've got one of the great Amazon Echo devices, all you have to do in this case is if it's Apple, say, hey, Siri, please play Stream On, or Google, please play Stream On, or Alexa, hey, please play Stream On. And all three of them will be kind enough to do it for you. So that's about as simple as it gets, folks. Six different places to get Stream On. It's free. So do not hesitate. Go out, please, and subscribe today to Stream On. All right. Okay. Well, special thanks to our guest from Wallet Hub, super analyst herself. That, of course, would be Jill Gonzalez. So, Jill, thank you for joining us, and we will see you next week when we take a long, hard look at what's going on streaming for this summer. Some surprises, hopefully, that you will enjoy. And if you have missed some things, we're going to catch up on some outstanding programming to binge watch. So have a wonderful and safe weekend. We'll catch you next week right here on Stream On with Jim Williams. Take care now.